The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy
with Nissan
on News Talk.
This treaty bars the way to the Republic with the blood of fellow Irishmen. And if it is only with civil war that we can get our independence,
yes, Dev there, or rather an actor playing Dev, the Michael Collins version of history there and how the Irish Civil War began. We will attempt over the next 10 minutes a more historically accurate account of that beginning, because I'm joined in studio by Ronan McGreevy. He's an Irish Times journalist, of course, author of the book Great Hatred, The Assassination of Field Marshal Sir Henry Wilson, MP. And Ronan has a great piece in the Irish Times. You can find it online now, and it includes an account published in that newspaper this day 100 years ago. By 4 o'clock, a bomb was heard in the direct of the forecourts, and its reports were followed by fierce outbursts of machine gun and rifle. At short intervals, more bomb explosions and more volleys were heard. The firing was still active at 4:30 a.m. and so began the Irish Civil War. Little did people maybe appreciate that at the time, or did they, Ronan? Was there an appreciation of what everyone and what the nation was on the precipice of this day 100 years ago?
I think there was, really. Okay. I think it was something that everybody knew was possible, but nobody really wanted to talk about. There's lots of accounts at the time that nobody thought, we're talking about people who had literally been in the trenches together during the War of Independence. So even though there had been a very volatile situation up to that point, like, there was no guarantee there would be a civil war. And the shelling of the forecourts, even the shelling of the forecourts on that morning, the 28th, didn't necessarily mean that there would be a civil war, although we know now that it was literally the opening salvo. There was a hope that the National Army, the pro-treaty National Army, could contain the fighting to the forecourts, get the forecourts to surrender, and everybody would sit around the table and try to iron out their differences, but it didn't work like that.
Well, what was the journey then, if you could take us a little further back in time, beyond the 100-year mark, what was the journey from the pro-treaty, anti-treaty split to this point in the forecourts, where we've got anti-treaty forces holed up inside and you've got heavy artillery pointed at it from outside?
Well, if you go back to the vote on the treaty in the Dáil in January 1922, it was very close, 64-57. De Valera led his followers out of the Dáil. He lost to Arthur Griffith to become the president of the provisional government, as it was at that stage. Then in March 1922, in April 1922, you had a series of conventions by anti-treaty IRA officers who said that they wouldn't serve under a pro-treaty government. And so you had the split then in the IRA. Those who were pro-treaty became the National Army, and then those who were anti-treaty became the anti-treaty IRA. So they, the anti-treaty side occupied the forecourts in April of 1922. And after that, there was a kind of a standoff. I mean, essentially, the anti-treaty and pro-treaty side were still mingling. They were still drinking the bars together. They were hoping against hope, like that character in Dickens, that something would turn up that would mean that they wouldn't end up fighting each other. Then you have a pact in May 1922. There's an election on June the 16th, so there's a pact between the pro and anti-treaty forces, between De Valera and Michael Collins. They're going to put up candidates on both sides. Michael Collins is pro-treaty, Emma De Valera is anti-treaty. And there's a hope and an expectation that perhaps that this might heal the rift. However, after the general election on the 16th of June, in which there's a comprehensive victory for those who are pro or neutral to treaty, my friend Field Marshal Sir Henry Wilson is shot dead in London on June the 22nd. This is just 6 days after the election. What happens then is that the British government blame the anti-treaty side and tell the Irish government that if you don't go into the forecourts and get these guys out, we'll do it for you. So the provisional government is left on the horns of a dilemma. Does it remove the forces from the anti-treaty side and risk a civil war, or risk another war with the British? The British already had a garrison of 6,000 troops in there. So that's the 22nd. Then on the 26th, the Free State National Army arrests a couple of anti-treaty officers who had been involved in trying to steal cars from a garage in Dublin. And then there is the, on the evening, the very almost at midnight on the 27th, there's the kidnapping of a Free State General, J.J. O'Connor. And this is the reason that the provisional government gives for shelling the forecourts.
But this is the kind of the causes belli, but the pressure was on them.
From the British, but it gave the Irish provisional Irish government an excuse basically to say, look, we can't have this. And it wasn't just that, there were other incidences of which anti-treaty troops were basically, I mean, our anti-treaty IRA were stealing or taking money from banks claiming that it was owed to them by the state. They were giving receipts, so they were saying it wasn't that they were taking the money, but there was a lot of law disorder around the place. And so there's a proclamation from the provisional government stating, you know, we can't put up with this anymore. We've just had a Free State General captured. We're going to have to do something about this. So that's how the Civil War starts.
And that Free State General, O'Connell, he's a fascinating character as well. Did he go to France to try to enlist the French in some sort of Franco-Irish alliance,
cordial between the French or the yeah. I mean, I wasn't aware of this, and I don't know if many people were, but there was a paper delivered at the Civil War conference in UCC, in which it was claimed that Ginger O'Connell, who was the deputy chief of staff of the new Irish Army, went to France to try and establish a pact, basically a military pact with the French against the British. They assumed that at some stage the French and the British will come to blows over the colonial empires, in which case France will be an ally of Britain. It was a crazy idea, but they also offered like air bases, etc., in Cork and Waterford to the French. I don't know where they got this idea from, because, I mean, if you remember back to the First World War, more than 500,000 British soldiers lost their lives in liberating France from the German occupation. So, I mean, I don't think that would have ever worked out. But it was from there, as far as they were concerned, it was worth a try.
I mean, it's never easy, and it's probably wrong to try to look back in time and point at a cause.
Yes.
But let's try and look back in time and point at and identify the point of no return. I mean, is the point of no return in the Civil War journey, is it the shelling of the forecourts?
Yes.
Is it the... Oh, it's not. You think even after your friend, Field Marshal Sir Henry Wilson, even after he was assassinated, there was hope to avoid bloodshed?
There was an ultimatum, and there was an ultimatum given. The British gave an ultimatum to the provisional government, and the provisional government gave an ultimatum to the anti-treaty rebels. But they were only given 20 minutes to clear the forecourts, and there was 160 rebels inside. I think the point of no return was when the Irish provisional government, as it was at the time, decided to shell the forecourts. And at that stage, they also allowed Liam Lynch, who became the anti-treaty leader, basically to leave Dublin. They actually captured him and let him go. So he went off to Limerick to raise an anti-treaty force against the army and to establish what he called was the Munster Republic, which was supposed to be a line between Limerick and Waterford, in which the Free State writ wouldn't run. But they never had the troops to enforce that. So no, I think, like, when you look back on it now, I mean, obviously the shelling of the forecourts was the point of no return, and De Valera issued a statement that evening saying basically, you know, the Free State government are now doing the English army, the English government's bidding for them, and we have to stand against that. So that's how the Civil War broke out.
And I know they wouldn't have been opinion polling to the level that we do these days in 1922, but what was the popular reaction to that incident, this initial incident?
Amazement, really. I mean, there was, if you look at some of the photographs and even some of the Pate footage at the time, there were people watching the bombardment from the bridge. I mean, this was, you know, this was like excitement for people at that time. There didn't seem to me to be much in the way of resistance to what the provisional government were doing outside Republican circles. Certainly the attack on the forecourts was supported by the press at the time. I mean, people were really fed up at that stage of the sort of standoff between two sides, and they wanted it done either way. But as I say to you, like, one of the things that was remarkable about this was you can see people watching from the bridges, watching it from the bridges.
Well, was there much international intrigue?
Massive, yeah. I mean, I was really surprised about this. It made all the front pages of the newspapers around the world at the time, especially the American newspapers. There was huge interest in America and all things Irish at that time. And you know, this is the whole business of Ireland after the First World War and the independence of Ireland was watched very closely internationally, and particularly by anti-colonial organizations, say in Egypt and India and so on, but also just generally speaking in Europe, it was one of the stories of that time.
Well, listen, it was 100 years ago today, as we said right at the outset, that first volley was fired into the walls, the 1 metre thick walls of the forecourts by the provisional government, by pro-treaty forces. Ronan McGreevy writing about it today in the Irish Times, where he's a journalist. He's the author of Great Hatred, The Assassination of Field Marshal Sir Henry Wilson MP, which is getting rave reviews, Ronan. So congratulations on the book as well. And thanks a million for popping into us here in studio. Plenty still to come on the show today after 5 o'clock. Helen McEntee, Minister for Justice, will be here to talk about tougher sentencing for abusers.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy
with Nissan.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.